You're listening to Let's Talk, Episode 15, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Howdy, all. Welcome to this week's episode of Let's Talk. Father Corey Stika here again. Glad you could join us for our community podcast where we discuss issues of interest to the SQPN community. And I think this week should definitely be one of great interest. But before we get into our topic, of course, introduce our panelists. First, we've got our special guest, Maria Ruiz Scapalanda. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you. You said that perfectly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was worried about messing up names. You know, I'm terrible with names. Sometimes I can't remember my own. So I'm always glad when I get someone else's name right. And then our other panelist is someone who should be familiar to the SQPN community, Steve Nelson. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, Father. I'm really happy to be here. This topic is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I know we've discussed it before. Catholic Weekend, we discussed it a few times. And So I'm looking forward to having an episode talking about Blessed Stanley. But before we get into our topic, I always like to give people a chance to introduce themselves. So, Maria, why don't you kind of tell a little bit about yourself and let the SQPN community know a little bit about you?
Well, first of all, I'm really happy to be here. It's a blessing to me to get to share the story of Father Stan even one more time. I have been a writer all my adult life. I got married right out of college. I went to the University of Texas in Austin. Moved to Oklahoma, where the Sooners don't really like the Longhorns, but we've gotten along just fine. And I've raised four children who are now adults here. And believe it or not, I'm a grandmother of nine now.
Wow, that's awesome.
I don't know. Makes me sound ancient.
No, that's fantastic.
But I've been a writer for the Catholic press really all my adult life. And this book in particular has been much more than a book project. This has become a journey with Father Stan. And I'm just so pleased that more and more people get to hear about this amazing man.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about the book as well as we kind of go through the story itself of, you know, what's going on. So I look forward to talking about that as well. And actually, I look forward to getting a copy. I don't have a copy of the book yet. I'll have to make sure to fix that problem.
Oh no! Well, we can fix that.
You know, it's not like these. I'll admit it. I'm not, you know, some of those talk radios. Oh, you have a great book. Did you actually read it? No. You know, I just admit it. I haven't read it yet.
You say so it up front.
But
I'll
have to fix that. So
I keep giving my copies away because I keep running into people and it's like, oh, I've heard of Father Stanley. What do you know about him? Well, here's a book you can read.
Exactly. Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I'll have to make sure to go find a copy of that. And Steve, why don't you introduce yourself for those who maybe aren't familiar with you?
Well, okay. I currently live in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and I'm the National Executive Director for two college fraternal organizations for college band members. So it's a very music-oriented organizations. But before that, I've done on several different things within the church, including almost 10 years in campus ministry. And then, as some of the listeners know, I've been involved with SQPN since 2006, off and on in one way or another. And then I even did a stint as a missionary teacher in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. I think that's when we first met, was like right after you got back from that. I'd heard of this Steve Nelson that was over in Papua New Guinea, and you know, who's this guy? I've never met him before. And then you came back, and that's kind of when we got to finally meet.
That's right. Yeah, I was at the CNMC that I think right after I got back.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that was pretty impressive. And then, you know, hearing the stories of you over there, and I'm sure that part of the reason why you're so intimately connected with this story of Blessed Rother.
Yeah, when I was doing campus ministry, you know, in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Mission in Santiago Atitlan, Guatemala, where Father Stanley was still in operation, and I used to take student groups there.
Oh, wow.
So I visited that parish a dozen times.
Wow.
And so I know Father Stan's story very well because it's a part of our history here in Oklahoma, but it's also part of my own history in taking students there.
Sure. Well, this is a great point to make the jump over to who is this Father Stan? I mean, obviously he's been beatified, but who was he? I mean, not even getting into the story of what led him to be beatified, but just who was he as a person?
Steve, do you want to start or you want me to?
Well, I feel like I should defer to the expert, but
yeah. I don't know about expert.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, you have to know a little bit about Oklahoma history, I think, to start with. This area of Oklahoma that I live in, which is only about 70 miles from where Father Stanley grew up, is all farming country, and it was settled mostly by immigrants who came, when the land was opened up to settlement. Mm-hmm. And there are various ethnic communities around Oklahoma, Italians and Germans and Czechs, mm-hmm. and Father Rother's community is called Okarchi, Oklahoma, and it was settled by German immigrants and farmers. And there's still many of the original families are still there. So he grew up in a small farming community, mostly German immigrants, and and that's kind of how he got his start.
Yes. Now there was a video that you forwarded to me, or forwarded to us, Steve. That's got the. It tells his story. It's a great documentary, by the way. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes so people can watch that. You know, I mean, he really grew up in an environment that any of us who live in small town America know, very rural, very, literally, salt of the earth type people who, they had to work the earth for their living. You know, what led him out of that environment, first of all, into the priesthood? I mean, I think that's a story that needs to be told. Maria, why don't you kind of talk about that?
I you call it small town America. I like to call it real America.
I won't disagree.
It's just amazing to me that this first martyr from the United States and the first priest to be beatified from the United States is from the middle of flyover country.
Yep.
You know, literally. I think what Steve mentioned is very important. The fact that he comes from that small town where farming, family, church, that's what life was about. And that's not just a happy description. It's a reality. They still live it that way there in Okarchi. And you can find Rother relatives everywhere. Because, like Steve mentioned, they're still there. His youngest brother, Tom, and his wife still live in the house where all the five children were born.
Wow,
isn't that amazing?
Awesome. That's awesome.
And I say five because they started as five. They lost one young daughter, and so they grew up as four, and all of them went to Holy Trinity in Okarchi from K through 12.
Oh, wow.
And Father Stan, or Stanley at the time, did not mention to anyone his call to the priesthood. He kept it to himself, and Sister Marita, his sister, who is also a nun, definitely likes to tell that story as saying, I had no clue, because they did not talk about those things in a good stereotypical German way. She said, we kind of kept it to ourselves. And then his senior year, my junior year, we announced to our parents that, hey, we both feel called to religious life.
That's funny.
It is, because as a mom, I cannot imagine having both of them at the same time say, we're ready to go now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the story you tell in your book about them all getting in the car and driving up to Wichita to drop Sister Marita
off.
And then picking up Father Stan's bags and taking him down.
Then going south, to San Antonio.
You know, so in a period of a weekend or a week, you know, the two oldest kids have flown the coop.
Flown the coop for vocations.
And as Tom likes to point out, it left the other two holding everything that had to be done at the farm.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, growing up in a rural area, you know, living in a rural area, for something like that to happen, you can imagine, you know, the amount of work that goes into a farm, even today, you know, I mean, farming has changed a lot since the time when he would have been a high school student going into the seminary. It still would be kind of, I could see the shock on the family's face when they would go, wait a minute, we're going to lose two of them?
Yeah.
Two of our workers? You know, for those who aren't aware, you know, a lot of times the farm kids are the farm workers.
Even their pastor would go out there on harvest time and help with the farming. And I think that's part of what I love about how Father Stan, they may not have talked about it, but he really ingested how to be a priest.
That's
from
great.
His experience.
Sure.
These were guys that hung out with them, you know, that knew the whole family, that had dinner with them and also worked out the fields. And that's exactly what he brought as a missionary with him. He learned from his own experience. It's really quite beautiful.
It is. It is very much so. So what happened when he ended up at seminary? He went off to seminary and it didn't sound like it went quite so well, did it?
I think as somebody in the video points out, I think it's Father Wolf, who's a cousin of Father Stan. Mm-hmm. He was involved in everything in the seminary, literally everything he did. Choir, he did handyman things, he was in the bindery, he was involved in pretty much anything that he could do. Studies, not so much. Mm. And he really struggled from the beginning.
Yeah, that's well, for some people, I suppose, you know, he had more experience, like I said, with handyman type stuff with the farm than he did. Got through schooling, but that was about it. But he did eventually get ordained. They got him through seminary, it sounds like.
I do want to point out that he did not do very well in the first seminary.
Mm-hmm.
He was down in San Antonio. And it's important to note, we're talking about an 18, 19-year-old kid, right?
Yep.
So he was involved in the things he was comfortable with and not in the schoolwork that needed to be done.
Right.
And he failed the first year of theology in seminary and was asked to re-examine and discern, is this really what you're called to do? So he was sent back to Oklahoma with his bags, and he went to see his pastor, and his pastor and he went together to see the bishop.
Mm.
And it was the bishop who asked him, okay, Stan, what do you want to do now? And when he said, I still feel called to be a priest, the fact that the bishop heard that and affirmed that and said, okay, I'll find you a place. Okay. That says a lot, too.
I find that one of the amazing parts of his story is that there were a lot of people telling him that, you know, he shouldn't be a priest. Mm-hmm. And he didn't give in to that, didn't listen to that. And he just kept plugging at it. And then thankfully, his bishop heard that, like you said.
Well, it might have been a wake-up call for him, too, that, okay,
exactly.
You know, I need to take some of the – if I'm going to do this, I need to take some of this stuff seriously where I might not want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, it is a little more fun to go work on things and do things with your hand than it is to sit down and read yet another textbook.
Yeah.
Especially one in Latin.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is a very big thing, you know, as a kid to finally realize, okay, so I feel called to this, but – what do I need to do to get there?
Right.
And I think, yes, he was determined, and yes, he was even stubborn about it in a good way.
Sure.
But it's a growing up thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he was sent to Mount St. Mary Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
Okay.
And that's where he finally did complete his studies. I was there this spring, by the way, for the first time. I had not been like to see the place, and it is stunningly beautiful.
It is a very beautiful campus. I've only really been past it. I've never actually been on the actual seminary campus, but it is a beautiful area.
I can see why he loved it so much.
Yeah. And it's kind of impressive that it's so close to places like DC and Baltimore, and yet it's pretty rural still.
It's a little town, but it's also Elizabeth Ann Seton's hometown.
That's true. That's true. Now, what after he got ordained, what led him to the mission field? Steve, would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I don't know exactly how he heard about it or how he got this idea. As I understand, it was totally his idea, I guess, based on what other people were doing. But he approached the bishop and said, I want to go do this. And I imagine the bishop was probably a little taken aback, because I imagine the bishop probably had to twist a few arms to get people to go there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way I understand it, it was he decided on his own that he wanted to do this.
That's absolutely right. I think it's an important part of church history, of American history, to point out that it was Pope John the 23rd who asked the north of America to send missionaries to Central and South America. And the reason why I think that's amazing and such an important part of this is, you know, we're familiar with Franciscans and Mary Knowles and Jesuits sending people down or over to wherever, you know, they go everywhere. But the Pope was saying, all of you need to send people to be missionaries, all of you. So the diocese in the United States were sending missionary teams. To my knowledge, that's the only time like in history where this has actually happened, where the different dioceses from Montana, from Washington State, and from there's a big mission still active there from Minneapolis and St. Paul, you know. They all send missionary teams. And Oklahoma, which is what you would call mission territory here, because we are 7% in some places, Steve?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Catholic.
Very small.
Yeah. We sent a missionary team to this small remote village in Guatemala. Yeah. And the team would have been at it, 5 years, I think, before Father Stan said, I would like to go also.
Good. Yeah, I know. I don't think my diocese ever did. I'm in the Eastern Diocese of Montana, but I know the Western Diocese, Helena, did have a mission at one point. I don't know. I don't think they do anymore, but I know they did at one point.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of those, unfortunately, have faded away as we're looking at our own population going, like you said, we're missionary territory too.
But it's not only that they faded, it's that they revived the missions.
Right.
Like in the case of Oklahoma, they had been no vocation. So there were no priests from there to serve the people. But by the time Father Stan and then his successors were there, I think it was the year 2000 maybe, where Oklahoma said, do you still need missionaries? And they had their own priests to serve them.
That's great.
So it is. It's beautiful. And there's the vocations in that particular parish are enormous.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like the story of how when the Oklahomans showed up in Santiago, they inherited a church that had been built in 1540.
Wow.
So it was 400 years old. When they got there, it had been closed for at least 100 years. It didn't have a roof on it.
Oh, geez.
So the first thing they had to do is build a roof, and they basically built an Oklahoma-style pole barn roof over the top of it. And as far as I know, it's still there.
Hey, it worked.
And then they had to build a rectory, and they had to do all of that because it was just a ruin when they got there, and they had to bring it all back to life.
So was there any kind of Catholic presence in that community at that time? Or, you know, obviously the church wasn't being used, but before the missionaries start, there wasn't anything then, huh?
I I don't believe so.
No, it was. It had been without a priest for hundreds of years, literally.
That's.
And it is the oldest parish in that diocese of Sololá, Chimaltenango. It's, yeah. And now they're the ones providing the priests for the rest of us.
Now, what size of, what is the population of the town around it? Do you have an idea?
Maybe 40,000.
Okay. So, I mean, it's what we would consider, at least again, in flyover country, is a fairly good sized city.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we 40,000 people, that's a major metropolitan area for us.
Yeah. But you have to want to get there. It's
yeah.
still a remote and on the shores of Lake Atitlan, but like you, it's a haul to get there.
Yeah. He obviously, Blessed Stanley, obviously, when he got there, he fell in love with it. How long was he there?
13 years.
13 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing when he first got there, things were pretty peaceful, all in all, at least as far as being able to do his work. But I know that changed very quickly, didn't it?
Steve, do you want to address some of that?
Yeah, Guatemala, like a lot of Central America during the late 70s, early 80s, were in a period of civil war, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. And Guatemala was no different. But for a lot of that period, the area of Santiago Atitlan had sort of been out of that, mm-hmm. out of the fighting and everything like that. But it wasn't long after Father Stan got there, and I suppose about the time he became the pastor there, that it all started to move into that area. And, you know, then there was military presence and guerrilla presence and everything else that was coming into the area. And that's what caused all the turmoil.
Sure.
The team, when he first arrived, was a team of lay and religious people, 12 people. Mm-hmm. But by the time all of this was happening, it had dwelt down to just him from Oklahoma.
Okay.
And then he had an associate pastor who was from a different Indian tribe.
Okay.
Down there. Like his village is Zutu Hill Mayan. And then there's around that lake, they speak all kinds of different languages.
And that's kind of an important aspect of this, is we're not talking about at least native Spanish speakers.
No.
You know, these aren't people who are, as we would call them, Hispanic.
No, I'm Cuban. And when I went there, I thought I could communicate easily with everybody. And I did with the one who spoke Spanish, but there's a lot of people that only speak Zutu Hill.
So,
and for Father Stan, that was something, because here's the guy that could not learn Latin as a seminarian, and he's thrown into a language school. And I think he was wise enough to realize very quickly, it's not just about Spanish. And I think he was adequate in Spanish, but he became fluent in Zutu Hill.
Right.
That's also a beautiful aspect of his vocation, is that he took that on to really be one with the people.
Sure.
And it's a tough language.
Oh, my gosh. When you hear it spoken, it's like nothing I have ever heard before.
There's a lot of those native languages in Central America. They use sounds that I don't think those of us who grew up speaking English or Spanish can do.
No.
At all. Well, this is a good place to kind of take a quick break here, do our little promotional break, and then we'll kind of get into what actually led to his martyrdom. Spoilers, if you haven't heard, but what led to his martyrdom. But we'll take a quick break here, and just thank you once again for listening to Let's Talk. You know, this is one of the number of podcasts here at SQPN that we have rebooted, that we've gotten going. We've got new podcasts coming out. We've got shows that we're restarting. Watch for Secrets of Star Trek coming out here pretty quickly. So we got lots of stuff going on. We would like but we'd like to hear from you. We obviously would like to hear your feedback. You could, you know, send feedback for Let's Talk at letstalk@sqpn.com. But we also have a survey, a listener survey that we're doing at sqpn.com/survey. Please do go take a look at that. It only takes a few minutes to do. We just want to hear from you and what you might be interested in us talking about, not just here on Let's Talk, but also for new podcasts. We want to make sure that we're putting out content that you're interested in. So please, again, do take a look at that listener survey. And if you do take the survey, you'll be entered for a chance of one of two $50 Amazon gift cards. So two lucky survey takers will have those gift cards available to them if they win them. So please do, again, take a look at that, sqpn.com/survey.
Hey, Steve, you and I should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you guys can. I can, since I'm, you know, since I'm on the board and doing podcasts, you know, they might think it's a bias if I win it, but you guys sure can. and you can, if you do win, you can use the $50 on Amazon to buy Maria's book. So that's even a good thing. So anyways, commercial time over. Let's jump back into the story. Of course, he was named blessed because he was martyred. Now, what happened? What led to that martyrdom? And now it wasn't – he actually ended up leaving the mission for a while, didn't he, shortly before he was martyred? Maria, why don't you talk about that?
I'll jump in and start it. So, you know, as the Civil War progressed in that area, the – right-wing military government of the country started to take a dim view of the Catholic Church because they thought that the Catholic Church was siding with the guerrillas and helping the guerrillas and things like that. And that was really the farthest thing away from Father Stan's mind. He just was helping the poor.
Right.
And, you know, and he had a lot of different ministries going on, but it was enough that the government started to take a dim view of the church. And as guerrillas, right-wing military, like hit teams,
sure,
started to come into the area, and people started to disappear. Members of the parish started to disappear, catechists and things like that. And sometimes their bodies were found and sometimes they weren't. And it just kept getting more and more dangerous. And priests around the country started to be killed. And, eventually, Father Rother found his name, or was told that his name was on one of the death lists. And that's at that point, he and his associate pastor fled to the United States. Mm. And that was his last visit home.
Mm. And he came to Oklahoma on that visit. And I call it in the book his Garden of Gethsemane, because in a very real way, he had to ponder, what am I called to do? And I think he did visit with family and friends and the bishops, obviously, but always telling the story of what was really going on there, and then realizing that he was still called to go back. And it's very lovely to see that one of the things that he kept saying over and over was, I promised them I'd be back for Holy Week. And he did. He came back for Holy Week that year, and it was to be his last Holy Week with them.
Now, when was he actually martyred?
1981, July 28th, 1981.
Okay, so it was still a few months after he returned that it had happened.
Yeah, he returned in was it March or April of 81?
Mm-hmm. Right before Holy Week. Yeah.
And what happened? I mean, what was the night it happened? Was what happened? Do we know?
You know, the feast of Saint James, Santiago, is right before. It was that week that he was martyred, and so everything in the town was decorated, and the church had this beautiful decorations that they hang to celebrate their saint's feast day. But in the middle of all of that, it was a very somber kind of the whole town could feel the pressure, the oppression of having the military in town. And at night, the young men would come to the rectory or to the church and ask for sanctuary. And there were some staying there. There were also nuns in the compound that slept on the opposite side of where Father was eventually murdered. The night that it happened, they had, the night before, he had celebrated Mass and had a dinner with the nuns. And I think he always tried to do festive things with them to keep the spirits up. But all the nuns, all the sisters that still were there, who have, two of them came for the beatification, by the way.
Awesome.
they talked about how they could tell he was, he knew that things weren't getting better, and he was really aching for the people that he could not help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think always strikes me when I think of that time period is how he knew that just being there was a gift to them. His gift was being present with them in the middle of their suffering. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to take the chance to be present even to the point that he could be killed. And he, this is why we know that he was a martyr, because he went knowingly.
Right.
He went knowingly. So anyway, that night he went to his room, and in the middle of the night, three masked men came in, and they found one of the young men that was in the rectory. He was the brother of the associate pastor. And they asked him where Father was. And they made him take them to the room where he was sleeping on the first floor. And they knocked on the door, and he said, Padre, they've come for you. And so Father Stan let them in. There was a struggle, and he was shot twice in the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, it's something that we don't think about here in the United States, of the difficulties and the sacrifices that really were done and are being done today in many mission areas by the people, by the priests, by the religious that are serving there. We've got it pretty easy here, don't we?
Yeah. Well, and it's important, I think, when we tell his story, we also remember all the people that were, had disappeared and that were taken. You know, it's, we're talking about thousands and thousands of people.
Right.
So it's many of them martyrs for the faith, not just for persecution. So,
you know,
he reminds us of the bigger picture, I think.
Yeah, and that's I want to get into that a little bit in a minute here about, you know, what does his story mean for us here in the United States today? But let's kind of close out the story of, you know, he is named a blessed now. What was the path that led from his martyrdom to the Pope naming him blessed?
His name was on a list that was presented from the Guatemala bishops of people that they knew that had died or had been killed for the faith. He was the, it was a list of, you know, locals and then Father Stan. and eventually the cause was not progressing fast, and the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City received permission from Guatemala to take the cause separately. And so for 3 full years under the leadership of Archbishop Beltran at the time, there was a commission that gathered all the information, and I got to be in at the end. I was part of the historical commission collecting the documents and things that were in Spanish is basically what I got to deal with. And the reason was we had a local priest here who became a bishop of Arkansas, Bishop Taylor, and he had been originally put on there as the Spanish person. Anyway, I got to replace Bishop Taylor at the end. So I have a nifty little seal that I had to put on all the documents that I saw with my name on it.
That's there you go.
Historical commission. Now I can use it with my grandchildren, you know. Anyway, so it was sent off to Rome, And we waited. And the first step was calling him a martyr, because that, as you know, puts him on a different track from a regular sainthood process. Mm-hmm. So kind of skipped a step and didn't have to have a miracle before he was named a blessed. And what a celebration that was. That happened just last year. It's not even a year yet. September 23rd here at the Convention Center in Oklahoma City.
Wow, that's awesome.
I was there. That was one of the best things I've ever attended. It's absolutely wonderful.
So, truly, truly holy.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that the Zutuil people considered Father Stan a martyr from the very beginning.
Sure.
Yeah. In fact, you know, they wanted to have him buried there in Santiago. But of course, the family wanted him to come home. And so they were allowed to keep his heart. And his heart is enshrined in the church there.
There you go.
There was never any doubt in their mind that he was a martyr. And so.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, Steve, because I think that it says it all. Mm-hmm. To them, he was so much there. Pastor, their priest, mm-hmm. that I can't imagine as a parent being asked that question, but they requested of his parents that mm-hmm. his heart remain there, and his parents knew. They knew that this is where it should be, and they agreed. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and you know, they tell the story too about the night he died, that when word started getting out that the people started gathering in the church, and the sisters had them singing Easter songs, resurrection songs, you know, instead of sad songs, they were singing joyful songs.
That's great.
So that's one of the things. That's, if I could go back in time, I'd like to see that.
That
yeah,
day.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. Now, where is he buried at, other than his heart?
His heart has been moved now to the main altar at Santiago Atitlan.
Okay.
His body is resting at the cemetery next to the Pastoral Center in Oklahoma City, because it was exhumed as part of the process.
Right.
From Okarchi and Broad, and eventually we're in the process of building a shrine, a pilgrimage shrine here in Oklahoma, where his body will be resting.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and that's another sort of miracle in my mind, because they have the idea to build this shrine, but it's like $60 million.
Wow.
And they've already raised most of it
in about
2 years, which is, I mean, you consider how small the church is here and everything. It's just, it's miraculous to me that they were able to do that so fast.
I can't.
And get most of the money in place.
I can't imagine building a, you know, a $2-3 million church, much less 60.
Well, it's going to be not just the church, but it's on the site of a former golf course.
Mm.
So we've taken up the grounds, and it's going to be like a place where people can come, and it will be used by the local Hispanic community, which I think is perfect. It's on that side of town.
Oh, sure.
And it will be the largest church in the state. So it will allow for us to gather as a church under one roof. I mean, for the beatification, I was part of the committee planning the thing, and we didn't know what to expect. Well, the convention center was so full. We had two overflow rooms, both bursting, that finally the convention center people closed the building.
And
so
no more.
People were sent out to like the local bars around the area to watch this thing. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's incredible.
There were people watching.
20,000 people came to this Oklahoma to do this, because it is a big deal. It's a local man, yes, but also it's an ordinary guy. It's what I like to say. He's a farmer. He's one of us. He's the kind of guy that failed a class.
Yeah.
Was sent home.
Yeah.
You know, we can all relate to something like that. And yet here we are calling him a blessed, because he remain faithful. There's an image in my, we had several pages of photos in the book, and I love that because I'm a visual person. So for me, being able to put, show, look, here he is serving Mass, here he is with his family, you know. But also what Steve mentioned about how they knew from the beginning that he was martyred for them and for the love of Christ. They collected his blood. The nuns went in and collected his blood and put it in these like mason jars, like, you know, the commercial ones, the big ones.
Oh, sure.
And when they had several masses there with his body before they released it to be sent to Guatemala City, and they processed during the offertory these jars.
Mm.
And there's a picture that was taken by a priest because it's behind the altar, and I don't know whose it was. We don't have a way to know, but whoever it was took a picture, and you can see the altar, and there's the chalice, and there's the jar with his blood.
Wow.
And I think this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a man who was clearly, for them, a sign of God's love fully. So you have the blood of Christ and the blood of the martyr on the same altar. It kind of gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, no kidding.
Say.
No kidding.
It's beautiful. And this is a man who gave his all. And that's why I think it's a priest and a Christian that we need for our time.
Yeah. And I think that really does kind of sum up, you know, what the message is for us is, you know, that we are called to give our life to Christ. And, you know, God willing, we'll do that for, you know, 80, 90 years of our life. And, you know, but some of us, it's not. And, you know, even here in the United States, there may be people who are called to give their life for Christ. I mean, just a beautiful story. I'll give you a chance here, Marie. Why don't you kind of pitch your book a little bit if you'd like. I mentioned what's the title of it?
The book is The Shepherd Who Didn't Run, and comes straight out of one of the letters that he would write to the church in Oklahoma, and his letters, because he was in the mission, were published in the diocesan paper, so we have lots of records of these letters. And in one letter, he said, "The shepherd cannot run at the first sign of danger." And it's beautiful. He was their shepherd, but he can also be our shepherd in leading us to understand what it means to live a holy life. You know, we're all called to that. It's not just for the people that are in missions.
Sure.
We're all called to become holy. And what I think Father Stan says to me as a woman, as a mom, as a grandmother now, as a writer, is, how do I live out that life in my very ordinary life? Because I'm not going to go off and do something majestic, not unless God surprises me next week.
Yeah.
You know, but how do I do that in this day-to-day, taking care of my kids, writing my articles? What does that mean for me today? And that's the message that Father Stan keeps teaching me.
Sure.
Is it means saying yes to God and not knowing what that yes will bring. And for him, the yes took him to Guatemala, yes, but also to become one with these farming community there, and then to eventually give his all for Christ. It's just a beautiful story. So my pitch is, if you want to hear more about this great story, do look up the book, because you want to get to know this man.
Oh,
and by the way, the Archdiocese has a great website, stanleyrother.org.
Stanley Rother. Excellent.
And it's spelled Stanley, L-E-Y, Rother, R-O-T-H-E-R.org. And you can find there videos and information and everything you want to know about the process.
Excellent. Excellent. That's good. That's a good thing. And do they have their documentary up there as well?
Yes. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, it's if you get a chance, and we'll
you don't want to miss that. Yeah,
that we'll link that in the show notes. It's very much worth watching. It's only 20 minutes long, so it's not a long show by any stretch of the imagination, but it's very much worth watching.
Did you hear that it was nominated for an Emmy?
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I mean, it was so well done.
Yeah, it's excellent. Excellent.
And Maria appears in it, and that's why it was nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, of course. Right. Of course. Well, very good. Well, this is a good place to kind of wrap up this discussion. And one thing we do, and I didn't mention this to you guys before. I hope you saw it in the notes, that we do a pick of the week. And it's an opportunity to, as Steve's looking around like, what am I going to do? I'm kidding.
No, I'm ready.
So, well, why don't we have you go first? Do the pick of the week.
My pick of the week is the story, the book called The Seven Story Mountain.
Oh,
by
yeah.
Thomas Merton. You know, I picked it up over the years to read bits and pieces of it, but I'm actually making my way through it now, and I just love it. I think it's one of those books that you have to kind of approach at the right point in your life. Anyway, so if you've not read The Seven Story Mountain, I would encourage you to pick it up. It's very easy to read, but it's also very deep.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it's one of those books that's on my list as well to read, and just, you know, of course, never get around to it because there's plenty of other things to read, but you know, of course, it is a really considered a seminal of a story of the spiritual life, you know, for modern times. So yeah, great pick. What about you, Maria? Do you have something you'd like to promote or pick?
Well, I'm not going to do my own book, but if you do go to the website that the Archdiocese has up, there's a book that was recently republished by the Archdiocese, and it's a collection of Father Stan's letters from it's not all his letters, it's from the last year of his life. So if you want to read with your own eyes what he says and how he describes the situation there, this is a great introduction to get to know him at a little deeper level. My book is a biography. So it's meant to tell you all that, you know, come to see who this guy is. And then if you want to get to know him a little better, The Letters of Stanley Rother. It's really beautiful.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, that sounds interesting. I was just looking at the website for him. And you can get Maria's book there. You can get lots of medals and statuettes,
yes,
and everything. So lots of good things you can buy there. Of course, you know, make the promotion too. You can get it at Amazon as well. But if you want to support them directly, it's probably be worth buying the book from them directly as well. Well, excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out too. My list of books is getting longer by the day.
Uh-oh.
not a bad thing. Not a bad thing at all. My pick of the week is not going to be a spiritual thing, but that's not a bad thing, you know, because one thing I've been kind of promoting recently is the need for working out. You know, I've exercised, taking care of our bodies. And the only reason why I've been promoting that is because it's kind of come to my realization at the age of 42 that I'm not getting any younger and I'm not getting any healthier. So, for those who haven't heard, I've been doing the Couch to 5K program, which I finished up. I haven't quite hit 5K yet, but I'm about 750 meters away. So I'm just about this next week, I should hit the 5K limit. 5K.
Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you. Nice.
It's over the course of 2 months, almost exactly 2 months to this point.
You better get with it before the snow falls.
Yeah, that's just it. I'm not looking forward to having to get a treadmill to keep going over the winter, but so be it. But what I'm doing for my pick of the week is actually one of the exercise apps that are available. You know, there's all these exercise apps, and the one I've been using is called Map My Fitness, and it's from Under Armour. It's great because it helps you to have accountability. Now, you can do friends and all that on the app, but you can also post it to different social media. You can share your workouts, and not just running, not just biking. You can do weightlifting, swimming, whatever. And it's a good way to keep that accountability, because I think that's part of it for me, is I've been posting them to Facebook that I've been exercising, so people have been noticing. So that gets me a little bit of guilt if I don't go and work out, you know. It's like, oh, somebody's going to say something if I don't go today, because today's my day, I usually do it. But it's good to have that, because, of course, it is important that we take care of ourselves physically, that we don't allow ourselves to become ill due to just not, you know, eating bad food and not working out and not keeping care of ourselves. It doesn't mean we have to be, you know, buff, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger type people, but just need to keep ourselves in shape. So that's my pick, is definitely that map my fitness, but all the exercise apps that are available that can really help us keep in shape. Well, thank you both for coming on. This has been a great story to hear. It's a very hopeful story. You know, it's kind of the interesting thing of the martyrs is a very hopeful story. Maria, where can people find out more about you, hear what you have to say? And you said you're a writer, so you got any places where people can read your writing?
Well, I do have a blog. It's called Day by Day with Maria. It's been more like week by week and month by month these days. But I think it's a good place to start anyway. And I'm definitely on Facebook and Instagram and those things, so people can look me up. I just want to say before Steve gets to say something, thank you, Steve, for letting me come today. He's the one that mentioned it to me, Father Corey. It's been really great to meet you.
It's been great to meet you as well. I am glad that Steve made that connection. You know, we had talked with, mentioned to Steve about it. I think you, now, we never did mention this. What is Blessed Stan's feast day?
July 28th. It is already approved for a local feast day.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Steve had mentioned on Slack chat that, hey, we should talk about this. Well, how about we have you on? And it went from there. Yeah. So I'm glad we were able to get you on.
Good job, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. Maria and I, we've only met in person a couple of times, but we're kindred spirits because of Father Stan. And, you know, I feel like I've known you for a long time.
I know.
That's great. And where can people find you, Steve, if they want to hear what you got to say?
Well, Facebook and Twitter are probably the primary ones. But I have a blog, too. It's called everythingesteban.com. That's everything, ESTEBAN.com. But it's probably more petrified than Maria's blog is. I was recently on retreat, and one of the things I did was try to take notes. It's like, all right, how do I jumpstart this, and what can I write about and everything? So I've got some new ideas. There should be some new stuff coming.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah, so it's so easy for blogs to slip like that. I'm the same way. You know, I've got my site, FatherCorey.org, FRCorey.org, and I post my homilies there, and right now that's kind of about it. Once in a while I'll post something, but that's where you can find me is FRCorey.org for my homilies. You can find me on Facebook mostly it's Father Corey Stica, last name spelled STICHA. Of course, you can find me here on SQPN, on this podcast, on the Secrets of Doctor Who, the upcoming Secrets of Star Trek, which should be coming out here in a couple of weeks. So keep an eye on that. Thank you again for listening. Glad you could join us. And we will talk to you again next week. God bless.